You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 5th of October 2020 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I just want to begin today by adding something to what I was talking about last week. I mentioned that we have to live like we are living under an occupation here in Britain and in white countries. And what I meant by that is that we need to preserve our traditions and we need to preserve our culture, because as if we are living under a foreign occupation, we are being given a new history, a false history. We are not being taught about our traditions. We're not being taught about the rich culture that we have. We're being told that we don't have a culture. We have multiculturalism. That nothing is our own and it's all been taken from these other peoples. And it's up to us as nationalists to preserve what we have and preserve our heritage. And that's what I meant by that. I didn't mean that like the Palestinians are living under occupation in Israel. And of course, they have a violent resistance against that occupation. That is not what I was referring to. Obviously, violence does not serve us in any positive way at all as nationalists, as we've seen over the last few years when people have carried out violence in the name of nationalism. And the result of that has been people getting hurt and clampdowns and censorship on the rest of us nationalists, to the extent where it's very difficult to actually find our voices now. On social media, you have to look for our websites to actually find the information that you're looking for, which really doesn't help at all, because it just means that the left don't actually get to hear our arguments. And when they do hear them, we just give them a sound thrashing. So what it really means is that because they aren't used to hearing it, it means that when we do pop up in places, we make fools out of them. It would be so much better if we could just have a conversation about these subjects and talk about what's being done to white people. We just want to stand up for our own people. That's all. One person that has become a figurehead for nationalists, whether rightly or wrongly, is Donald Trump. And I think while he's been in hospital, it's really made a lot of us think about how much he actually means to us, certainly to the demonstrators that have been outside the hospital showing their support, showing their love for the president. And I found it very moving to see him come out in that car to wave to them. I don't know why, it just really moved me to see that, and the affection that he had for his supporters and the affection that his supporters had for him. It does look as if he's going to beat this virus pretty quickly, which will be good, because then he can say, well, look, it's not such a big deal unless you have these underlying health problems and unless you are very old. So much as the left-wing media are gloating over this and claiming that they have somehow won because Donald Trump has actually caught the virus after not wearing a mask, I think it's going to backfire on them, because he's going to show that it's actually not that dangerous for most people. And by contracting it himself, he proves that. And the first bit of news that I've got today is actually some good news about coronavirus. Coronavirus does not appear to spread through surfaces such as door handles or light switches. research has suggested. Monica Gandhi, a professor of medicine at the University of California, said the surface issue has essentially gone away. She added that any virus left on surfaces was not usually strong enough to make people ill. This suggests that measures such as hand washing and not touching your face are less important than social distancing and mask wearing in preventing the spread of the virus. So this is very interesting because right from the start, people have been concerned about hand sanitizer and touching door handles and all these sorts of things. If you go into a hotel, they're very careful about this. So I don't know whether this will actually affect people's behavior that much, whether they will now be so used to being careful of these sorts of things that they will actually change, but it is good news. It also means that constantly spraying surfaces with antibacterial spray, as many have taken to doing during the pandemic, may be unnecessary. Professor Gandhi told the US science website Nautilus, it is not spread through surfaces. There was a lot of fear at the beginning of the pandemic about fomite transmission. We now know the root of the spread is not from touching surfaces and touching your eye. It is from being close to someone spewing virus from their nose and mouth without, in most cases, knowing they are doing so. I thought you could only spew anti-Semitism. Is that like that? And that's supposed to be virulent as well, isn't it? It's strange the way that they've used these two terms here, similar terms, spewing virus from the nose and mouth and spewing anti-Semitism. Separate research published in The Lancet has suggested that any coronavirus left lingering on surfaces carries only a very small risk of infection. There you go. So you don't need to worry so much about collecting the mail from the postman any longer. Next bit of news that I've got here for us is a European Commission and a new European Commission report on staff diversity, which of course is saying that we need to replace more white people with non-whites. The report has accused the EU of being too white and not having enough representation from minority communities. Well, who would have thought it that a European Union institution might actually have Europeans in it? Do they say things like this in Africa? That there's too many Africans there. We need to have some white people in these institutions. Why does it only go on in white countries? The report has stated that while ethnic minorities make up at least 10% of the population in the European Union, the number of ethnic minorities within EU institutions is far lower. Well, why might that be? Might it be that you actually get into these institutions on merit? I mean, what they're trying to imply here is that people only get into these institutions because they're white, because they have white privilege. But of course, the reason why they're really in these institutions is because of their merit. That's why they have been put there. We can say that they may be corrupt. Their loyalties may be to things other than the European people. But they are actually there on merit to the people that put them there, whether it's the bankers or what have you. They certainly weren't put there just because they were white. And I'm certain that if they could get more non-whites in there that were actually competent, then they would be doing it. We know that they would be doing it. As a result, the European Commission has vowed to launch an investigation into the ethnic profiles of its own employees to set possible quotas for its recruitment policy, Le Figaro reports. Well, how anti-democratic is that, that they're just going to set up quotas? I thought the European Union was supposed to be a beacon of democracy. Well, apparently not. They're just going to have quotas and they're going to put people in there simply because of what race they are. Monica Silvana, an MEP for the Spanish Socialist Workers Party, who heads the European Parliament's anti-racism intergroup, said a potential change in recruiting would face difficulties. It is very difficult to set quotas. If you set one up for black people, you'll have to do it for the disabled, the gypsies, Latinos. It would be impossible to create such a system. But on the other hand, positive discrimination, similar to that of gender parity, would be possible, the MEP said. And what do they mean by that? Well, positive discrimination, similar to gender parity, obviously with genders, there's just two, there's male and female. And what they mean here is there would just be two, white and non-white. So instead of setting up quotas for you're going to have this number of black people, you could have this number of Latinos. What they will say is you have to get rid of this number of white people. So it's quite blatant that this is an anti-white policy that is being put in place under the disguise of somehow doing away with racism. The way to do away with racism is to have the races be segregated, and then it would be impossible for there to be any instances of racism happening anywhere at all, because the races would be living with their own people within their own groups, and they wouldn't actually be having anything to do with any other race. So they just couldn't be racism. It would abolish racism overnight if we just went back to a system of segregation. And this is what a lot of these black organizations are calling for. Over the weekend, there was this black armed militia, the Not Effing Around Coalition. And what is it that they are demanding? They are demanding their own space, their own sovereign space for black people to live, being policed by black people, having their own area. And I fully support this. This is exactly the same thing that we as nationalists are calling for ourselves. We just want our own spaces. I mean, it would be so easy to do. For a start, you could just say that the rural areas of the country are now sanctuaries for white people. They are reservations for white people, so that we can preserve our traditions, preserve our culture, and have areas of the country that just belong to us. What is wrong with doing that? But no, we have to have the opposite of that. We have to have a big push to try and get as many non-whites as possible inserted into these white areas of the country to break them up, break up any sense of community that there is there. I mean, the countryside is the last part of the country now that actually still has a sense of community. And you don't have to go very far to find the evidence for this. There was a huge study that was done about diversity a few years back, a worldwide study. Absolutely massive. And that was the results that it found, that the diversity just ruined all sense of community. And the last places where we now have this sense of community is in the rural areas. Why do they not entertain this idea, this way to get rid of racism? On the television, they say, well, we're not biased at all and we're completely impartial. And when we show this anti-racism stuff, we show Black Lives Matter, it's not political because everybody is against racism. Well, okay, everybody is against racism, but there are different ways of dealing with it, aren't there? And if you're going to put one point of view of how to deal with it on the television, Black Lives Matter point of view, then surely if they're going to be impartial and non-biased, they should be putting the other side's point of view. They should be putting the nationalist point of view on the television, that if we had segregated areas, that would also get rid of racism, and it wouldn't cost anywhere near as much as it costs us to try and enforce this unnatural system of multiculturalism. And it would be a lot cheaper than what they're doing here of just having these quotas and just getting rid of white people and replacing them with peoples that will have a much lower average IQ and obviously are going to be much less competent at the job than the white people. According to Le Figaro, the EU is looking to entice ethnic minority students into working for the European Union, and states that human resources managers will undergo unconscious bias training. Well, why would people have a bias in the first place? People have a bias because of their experience, and everybody has a different experience. So how can they claim here to know what your unconscious bias is? And what are they doing messing around inside people's unconscious mind? Isn't that a little bit dangerous? Of course, we know what this is. It's basically telling us that white people are responsible for all the failures of non-whites, and we should be feeling guilty for that, and we should be handing over our entire civilization to them, and we should be glad that they are here bringing us their vibrancy, which includes grooming gangs, acid attacks, rape gangs, terrorism, and all the rest of it, which we get in exchange for tasty kebabs, if you like kebabs. I can't stand kebabs. I've never thought that argument is particularly good, because we can always just follow a recipe if we want to eat foreign food. Well, the Commission has called on the European Parliament and the European Council to also consider promoting diversity within their staff as well. Again, look at these weaselly words, promoting diversity. They don't mean just saying, well, isn't diversity great? What they mean is literally putting out adverts to get staff saying, no, white people don't need to apply, or ethnic minorities preferred. And of course, if you're a white person and you try to apply for this, then you're just not going to get the job, whilst also being told, if you do get the job, that you are somehow privileged and that you've got this job at the expense of these non-whites who are not indigenous to Europe anyway. How can they call it a European Union or European institutions when they don't have Europeans in them? How can you expect somebody that is not European to represent European people? They're going to be trying to represent their own people. That's what comes natural to them. To expect them to be representing the best needs of European people is unnatural. It's not fair on them to do that. And of course, they don't expect them to do that. They want them to stand up for what's best for them. But of course, we are not allowed to stand up for what is best for us. We will be accused of racism, white supremacy, and all the rest if we try and speak up for ourselves. Younes Omarjee, an MEP of the far-left France Insoumise, added, "Within the European institutions, the same patterns can be found throughout Europe. People of colour occupy the least valued positions and are often invisibilised." They've invented a word there, invisibilised. "Cleaning, maintenance and security personnel. And at the top, the uniformity is quite different." Again, why might that be? Could it possibly be because they have this lower average IQ? If you look at IQ and if you look into it, that whatever the average IQ is or whatever IQ you have, it predicts the sort of jobs that you're going to be good at. And the lower IQ, it predicts that you're going to be good at cleaning, you're going to get a job on maintenance, or you're going to get a job as a security guard. If you have a higher IQ, then you're going to get a job as an academic or an intellectual of some kind. And so what they're trying to do here is they're trying to put the people that are best suited to cleaning, maintenance and security in high-powered positions. And it's absolute lunacy, this pushing of diversity and equality. The report is not the first time the EU has been criticised as being too white in recent years. In 2017, former European Commissioner for Migration, Home Affairs and Citizenship, Dimitrios Avramopoulos, praised several articles that stated the EU was too white and said the EU should replace white workers with people of colour. Imagine that. A Greek person is praising articles that say that there are too many Greeks within the EU. I wonder if he is actually Greek or whether he's just got a Greek name. In the UK, many media articles have accused everything from the countryside to the music industry to weddings as being too white. Despite this, it was revealed that in the media, ethnic minorities are actually vastly overrepresented compared to their share of the population. And there are actually drives at the moment to get more diversity into the directorships. In California, they're saying that at least one director from every company has to be LGBTQ. And if you think, well, LGBTQ is about 1% to 2% of the population, according to some studies. And if you think, well, a company might have two or three directors, they're saying that this group that make up 1% of the population should make up 30% of the directors, or even 50% of the directors. And you think about how many black people there are in Britain, I think it's about 8%. I think actual non-whites in Britain is about 15%, but blacks are about 8%. And yet, if you're looking at the television adverts, most of the time they will make up 50%. Of the television advert. And the adverts that they are in are not the sort of adverts that you think are being aimed at the black community. They are aimed at the white community. And the subtle double meaning to these adverts is that they are not just trying to sell the product. What they are trying to do is sell multiculturalism. In actual fact, the selling of multiculturalism and diversity is more important to these advert companies than actually selling the product. And we see the proof of this in the Gillette advert that insulted men and basically said that men were savages from the Dark Ages and we should all be more like women. And this resulted in people refusing to buy Gillette. Masses and masses of people stopped using Gillette because of this. Did they stop the advert? No, they were quite happy to keep pushing this advert. They will keep pushing this diversity and equality on us because there isn't a financial gain. There isn't a financial goal behind it. The goal is to wipe out white people. The idea that we don't have competitors in the world, or enemies, as they may have been called in the past, is just this new idea that has been forced upon white people. These non-white races, they are our competitors. The world is a finite place. We have finite resources. We have limited resources, and we are in a competition for them. And all these other races, they understand that, and they advocate for what is best for them, and they do what is best for them. And as white people, we tell us that it's racist to think like that, and that we should just be handing our resources over to these people instead of competing with them for them. We're just giving up and handing our civilization over to people that have shown throughout history that they have difficulties with maintaining civilization, let alone creating civilizations. I was having a conversation earlier on Telegram about this, and it's quite shocking the number of people that don't actually know the history of these prior civilizations that were in the Near East, that they were all originally white. And once they started interbreeding with the non-whites, the non-white slaves, really, that they brought in there, once they started interbreeding with them, their IQ went down and they stopped being able to maintain the civilization. And that's why Egypt is in ruins. That's why Assyria is in ruins. That's why Babylon and Iraq is in ruins. All these places are in ruins because the people that actually built the civilization stopped being the people that were there. They imported other peoples in there. The civilization itself acted like a magnet. And lots of foreign people moved in there. They were made into citizens. And once they started interbreeding, the IQ goes down and the ability to maintain the civilization goes down. There's a very old quote. The problem with Athens is that there were no more Athenians there. And that's a very old quote. And that explains what happened to Greece. The same thing happened in Rome with the Roman Empire when they brought in all these other peoples and they made them all into citizens and the empire fell apart. Some of our oldest histories, some of our oldest songs going back 3,000-4,000 years are singing the praise of civilizing these pagan nations that were around us, bringing them the benefits of civilization, making them into citizens, and then our aristocracy marrying them. And that's what brought about the downfall of these civilizations. A lot of these Egyptians would, the Egyptian pharaohs, they would marry these princesses from these mixed race tribes that were around them, and that would be diplomacy. And once you've got the aristocracy that are doing this, it soon works its way down to the working classes, and eventually you have a people there that don't look anything like their ancestors, and they're not able to keep that civilization going. And this has been the story of our history for thousands of years, and that is what has brought us to this stage now. What we see going on around us now with this promotion of diversity and equality is not new. There is nothing new under the sun. These same ideas were being put around right back at the dawn of civilization in the Fertile Crescent in Mesopotamia. We had exactly the same thing going on. We had people calling for more non-whites to come in because that would make more money. Greed was a part of this, which is a vice, and also the misapplication of the virtue of charity. Because we are a charitable people and we like to help people, and blacks probably won't like to hear this, but a lot of the drive to going into Africa and colonizing it and in India with the British Empire was the idea that we were helping these people. We were bringing them the benefits of the white world. We were bringing them the benefits of justice, a system of law and order, the benefits of education, teaching them the value of hard work and delayed gratification, telecommunications, all these things that we brought them. And we thought that we were being good for doing so. In actual fact, we weren't being good because we were interfering with their natural evolution as a people. And once you have done that, it then becomes your fault if it goes wrong. And we have this moral duty to these peoples now, because we have interfered in their natural growth. We have this moral duty to help them out, which is very unfortunate. But we could still help them out in their own countries. We don't have to keep importing them into our own. It would be much better if they just stayed in their own lands and we could help them out there rather than bringing them here and diluting our own people and diluting our own culture. Well, I've got one other news story to bring up today, and I think this is quite positive. It could be better, they could do better, but at least they are doing something. Britain's domestic intelligence agency, the security service MI5, will have a unit dedicated to investigating far leftists and anarchists plotting terror attacks in the United Kingdom. Well, it's about time too, isn't it? They should have had this years ago. And it shouldn't just be for plotting terror attacks. I mean, what would they call the looting and the rioting that is going on in America at the moment? If that was to be going on in Britain, would they be calling that terror attacks? Because everything that happens in America, sooner or later, it starts happening in Britain. And I think we will be likely to see mass looting and mass rioting within the next couple of years. And if the security services really want to put a stop to it, they need to start working on that now, not later in the future. But at least they now have this group, or they are setting up this group that is going to investigate far leftists and anarchists. MI5 has created the new unit to target left-wing anarchist and single-issue terrorism, or LASIT, with single-issue terrorism including extremists in the animal rights movement, according to The Telegraph. Will this be looked at in the same way that the so-called far-right are, though? Will they be looking at Twitter accounts and Telegram groups and going after these Antifa when they start making threats about what they're going to do to nationalists, when they're threatening to disrupt demonstrations and threatening to dox people, threatening to set fire to things, making plans to set fire to things? Will that all come under this unit, I wonder? Probably not, but as I say, at least they are doing something. Europe is already seeing cases of such acts of extremism, with two militant vegans being jailed last year for 15 attacks against butchers and other animal product shops in France, in what was described as a legal first by French media at the time. And of course, we have always had problems with animal rights extremists doing things like this, and the police have always investigated them. I'm not sure that they are that much of a problem now, though, compared with Black Lives Matter. If we look at that American militia that I was mentioning earlier, the Not Effing Around coalition, we have a similar thing over here in Britain. There is a black militant rights group that dresses up in political union uniforms, all wearing stab vests and pretty much saying the same thing, and they've just been allowed to get away with it. And that is the sort of thing that could escalate. Unlike the American group that are asking for their own state, their own sovereign state, this British group, I think they just want to replace white people. From what I've heard, they're just saying, be grateful that all we want is reparations. We're not asking to kill you all, things like that. So we do see a double standard here with what the left are allowed to say and what the right are allowed to say. Last month in the UK, animal rights activists were condemned for anarchist actions and accused of encouraging telephone terrorism after they published the home addresses and telephone numbers of Conservative MPs who support a badger cull. Now, I'm not sure I don't think that is that good. I don't think it should be called telephone terrorism when you dox someone. Doxing someone is obviously a terrible thing, and it should be prosecuted. People have a right to their privacy. They should not be doxxed. But to call it terrorism, and terrorism implies physical violence against people or property with the goal of furthering a political cause. They could say that the point of putting out these addresses was to put these people at risk. And in if that is the case, then they need to be doing the same when people expose nationalist groups. They should be accusing Hope Not Hate of telephone terrorism when they dox people and when they put out people's home addresses and telephone numbers and identify people. You can't just have them going after the left, going after the right for this sort of thing, and just giving the left a blank check. But at least they're going after these animal rights activists for doing this. A Whitehall source speaking to the Times, however, said that the threat from left-wing terrorists was a tiny fraction of cases compared to the danger posed by jihadists and far-right extremists. Yes, of course, because it was far-right extremists throwing bicycles at mounted horseback police during the Black Lives Matter riots, and it was far-right extremists that injured 50 police during the Black Lives Matter riots, wasn't it? It is such a shame that the so-called far-right did actually go and hold a protest in London after those after the attacks on the statues, because unfortunately there were some attacks on the police. So you know, they can say that there is this threat from far-right extremists because we have evidence of it. And it's just such a shame that they are able to come up with any instances of people on the so-called far-right engaging in violence, but unfortunately they can. The formation of the unit comes as part of a shake-up following the security service taking the lead from police on domestic terrorism. The Times reports that two-thirds of MI5's caseload is domestic terrorist threats, including jihadist and far-right, with Islamic extremism still representing the greatest threat to the United Kingdom's security. And of course, you wouldn't know that if you listened to what Neil Basu says, who is the head of County Terror, because of course he says that the biggest threat is the far right. And what is it that this big threat that the far right supposedly do? Well, they put up stickers saying it's okay to be white. That is considered a call to violence by these people. It's just insane. Another 20% is dedicated to dealing with the IRA and the rest with hostile nations such as China. MI5 and the Police Service of Northern Ireland said last month that the new IRA still exists and is still dangerous. And the IRA used to be a real big issue for the nationalists in the 70s and in the 80s, but it's really not a topic of conversation in nationalism today. The IRA really don't seem to form a part of the general conversation among the nationalist community, but they certainly did years ago. It was very very anti-IRA. I guess we live in more peaceful times now, so it's not such an issue, but it certainly used to be. The new IRA was formed between 2011 and 2012, has around 500 supporters, and is linked to 4 murders. It is believed to be focused primarily on plotting attacks against police. However, they admitted to the murder of journalist Lira McKee last year. PSNI and MI5 also said, according to the BBC, that the new IRA has a constant appetite for obtaining weapons from overseas, but so far it has not been very good at it. Yes, so hopefully that continues and they don't get very good at it, and hopefully they don't get more than around 500 supporters. Interesting that 20% of this unit is dedicated to just these 500 people. Perhaps this unit isn't actually that big. I don't think it tells us how much resources are actually going to go into this, but it is good news that they have set up a unit that is going to go after far leftists and anarchists anyway. That's not top marks, obviously, because they're linking it with terrorism, and really they should just go after violent far left groups, but at least they are now taking a few steps in that direction. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Didymus Samydid once again to talk about the extreme violence of the Spanish communists. So you can look forward to that tomorrow. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.